Welcome back to the studio at the Bob Davis Podcasts for Podcast 550, the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 44. So this was the week of all Hillary all the time. It's starting to plane off now, and I don't want to go into it in depth because I do in the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 44. Two new segments with new content and two excerpts from the podcast this week. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to podcast 548 and 549, the hearts of those podcasts are sort of excerpted in this podcast, podcast 550 for the radio show. The whole idea of the radio show is to take content from the podcasts and put it on the radio. And it's been kind of funny because that was the whole intention originally. And now I do four segments of new content, and sometimes I do excerpts, and I don't know what I want to do with it. So Friday morning here at the Bob Davis Podcast's broadcast bunker, and let's go with segment one. Here we go. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. What a difference a week makes. So week before last, I was about done with talking about politics, and then Hillary Clinton collapsed at a 9/11 memorial in New York City just this last weekend, and the whole storylines have changed dramatically. So this week on the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, some thoughts from the podcasts this week on the controversy and speculation about the Democratic presidential candidate's health problems as the story developed. And then we're going to get into the role of social media, the role of mainstream media, and the role of media organizations with resources to investigate and tell the voters what the real story is. It remains to be seen if they actually will. As far as the effect of this on the Democrat candidate's campaign, we're going to have to watch the state-by-state polls over the next couple of weeks to assess the potential damage to the Clinton campaign over Collapsegate, Pneumoniagate, Blood Clot on the Braingate, Hillary's 9/11, or whatever you want to call it. Certainly, late last week, a Bloomberg poll of so-called Rust Belt states, I think taken last weekend in the aftermath of her deplorables comments and the collapse at the 9/11 memorial, shows Donald Trump up by 5 in Ohio, a critical electoral state. As new polls roll in over next week or so, we're going to begin to get an idea of how much damage Clinton's deplorable remarks, and probably more especially her collapse in New York, will have. We have less than 50 days to go until most of the voters in this country cast their vote for president, 435 congressmen, and one-third of the U.S. Senate, not to mention a myriad of local elections and ballot issues. Yes, it is refreshing to see the media turn its guns on the Clinton camp, but I should point out by Tuesday, I didn't see any mention of Clinton's weekend health problems in newspapers like the New York Times or the Minneapolis Tribune. Not any big surprise, but actually, it's almost breathtaking how quickly they have suppressed reportage on, Collapsegate. I doubt any of the major newspapers like the New York Times or the major television networks are going to devote any resources to investigating actually what health problems Hillary Clinton has and whether they might impede her ability to serve as president. I talked about that a little bit in this week's podcast because you're dealing with medical records, which, of course, are protected by state and federal law and are supposed to be controversial confidential, as well as doctor-patient relationships, which are sacrosanct. In fact, the New York Times devoted, instead of the Hillary Clinton story, a considerable amount on its front page space last week to the improvement of the financial position of the middle class, at least according to Census Bureau data updates, which are mostly estimates in themselves, and to a minor kerfuffle between Secretary of State Kerry and the Defense Department over a data-sharing agreement between Syria and regarding Syria between the United States and Russia. Still, another poll shows over 50% of the respondents currently think Hillary Clinton is lying about her health condition and don't expect the former secretary to tell the truth. So, her collapse in New York last weekend is the big story impacting the presidential race
until it isn't. And as the poll numbers come in and she returns to the campaign trail at some point, I guess next week, we're going to see how her campaign reacts to its own internal polling and battleground states on the issue. And we're going to see what strategy they come up with to combat the losses if the Bloomberg poll is a bellwether and indicative of other battleground states. There are two other developments that should be mentioned in this show heading into next week, and I want to talk about them. First of all, the stories about how those pesky establishment Republicans are terrified of an actual victory by Donald Trump. And second, the reporting on Census Bureau data that shows the average income, actually it's the mean income in the United States, rising from somewhere around $54,000 to $56,000, and this being touted as a major income gain by the middle class and as a sign of success by the Obama administration's economic policies, and touted as a guide for more of the same for somebody running on the Democrat ticket that wants to continue Obama's economic policies. And I want to talk about both issues because I think they're indicative of both media bias at the national level with publications like the New York Times, and because I think they should be addressed, particularly the economic data. So first, we're going to talk about the Hillary Clinton health scare. I've got some personal experience with some of the conditions they say that she's experienced, conditions we know for a fact, actually, that she experienced, and I'm going to share that. And we'll talk about the potential knock-on effects of her health scare with the voters. Given the fact that both mainline parties are so anemic, confused, corrupt, and bankrupt of ideas, they managed to nominate two of the worst candidates in history. With high negatives for both Clinton and Trump, according to voters polled over the last few months, almost anything can happen in this election. It's very hard to predict the outcome of this thing. Are some Republicans terrified of a potential Trump candidacy? Well, I suppose I would respond to that, who cares? This is another dog bites man story treatment in that Republicans who criticize their own party always get headlines and are touted as courageous, while Democrats who criticize their party's candidates are hardly news. But okay, let's talk about this in this show. Remember, the Republican leadership had plenty of opportunities to nominate someone other than Trump, but it was they who ran more than 17 candidates thinking it would be a coronation for Jeb Bush, only to have discovered too late that they had created a reality TV show called the Republican Primary Race, with its cattle call debates and name calling in places like Iowa and South Carolina. And as the New York developer and reality TV show star, Trump dominated the hapless Republicans, forcing the establishment to cut a Faustian bargain with him in order to remain in power. Of course, they're terrified, since the trade protectionist, infrastructure-building, big-spending Trump bears no resemblance to whatever the GOP was supposed to stand for, but it is they who caused this problem. And by the way, the issue isn't Trump, whatever he is and whatever kind of president he might make. The issue is the Republican Party and its representatives in Congress and at the state level and governors and what they stand for or don't stand for. Finally, the U.S. economy hasn't grown more than 2% a year for the entire Obama presidency. If the president had been able to foster policies that managed even just 3.5% economic growth over the past 4 years, we would have had an economy $3 to $4 trillion larger by now, at least. The last time the Census Bureau measured the income and financial status of Americans was in 2010. The next census is due to be taken in 2020, I think. Census updates on issues like income in the U.S. are based on smaller sample sizes and projections. And of course, we know that in 2008, we had the nadir of net worth of all Americans. So new estimates were bound to be better. The economy was and will remain an issue in this election, with the stock market correcting, deflation present in the system rather than inflation, and questionable monetary policy. That is, too low, near 0% interest rates affecting the bond markets in the U.S. and across the developed world. The future economy is very important. It remains a key issue. Now, I've traveled across the country in the past year, 2 years, more than once, and I was one of the first to tell listeners in my podcast that I did not see a mid-1930s motif depression economy in my travels, and this confirms it, this data. But it does not change the fact that the economy isn't growing that much beyond the rate of inflation, and the policies advocated by both the presidential candidates and a lot of people in Congress aren't going to change that. So coming up, my first reaction to the health scare for the Democratic presidential candidate this weekend, and a personal story about blood clots on the brain and what they do. Then, as the story developed, we'll talk a little bit more in depth about the impact of the Hillary Clinton health scare. And then we're going to talk about the economy and the political road ahead in the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show for this week. So stick around. There's a lot for us to talk about this week on the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. So let's get to it next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com, or to sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. And to hear more of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, yep, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. All right, just ahead of the second segment for this week's Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Hey, I got to tell you, exgovernmentcars.com is back and running full strength at 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. Ex-Government Cars, of course, is Minnesota's only dealer specializing in these one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs, and they're great. I've had four Crown Vics and, of course, now Mobile Podcast Command, which is a 2000 Ford Super Duty ambulance, which I'm taking to Agora Fest this coming weekend, the weekend of the 23rd. And I'm super excited about that. But if you need a car, if you need a loan, if you have a job you can get approved, which is great for work trucks, SUVs, vans, and exgovernmentcars.com takes trades. They pay the highest values every day without all the bull. They're great after the service sale or after the sale service. And I've seen Ed really help people out who need a little bit of training on having one of these cars, whether it's a Charger, a Chevy Impala V8, a Yukon Expedition, Ford Police SUV, Ford Police Sedan. Don't forget the 3-day Love It Guarantee exclusively at Ex-Government Cars. So here's the deal. Get your butt down to Ex-Government Cars, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, or you can just contact them old school on the telephone at 763-777-8782. That's 763-777-8782. Click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcasts.com or check them out at
ExGovernmentCars.com.
Okay, here is segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcast and to hear more of this show, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. After Hillary Clinton collapsed on the street in New York City this last weekend, there was a lot of speculation about her medical problem or what her medical problems might be. One of those theories was that they are the result of knock-on effects of blood clots on the brain, which Hillary Clinton sustained after she fainted and fell while Secretary of State. Now, I have some experience with the effects of a blood clot on the brain, sustained by none other than my father, and I'm going to tell you about it in this segment. And the Democrats are going to talk about how Franklin Roosevelt was not in very good health in 1944, and yet here he was this great leader. Well, Franklin Roosevelt was nearly dead in 1944. He was ashen white, but even Roosevelt, to my knowledge, and I just read a book about it, never fell down or anything when he was on the campaign trail. He actually rose to the occasion. He loved to campaign. But having said that, so he won the presidency in 1944, and He died less than 3 or 4 months later after he, you know, took the oath of office. So he made it, but he was definitely dying. And of course, Roosevelt's problem was a heart problem. He had polio as a kid, and his health, his issues with walking were always concealed, even though he swam every day and did everything he could to look and appear to be vigorous. And I think he was vigorously healthy. And I think it was the time in office, 4 terms in office. Office killed him. Basically, that's what happened. He probably would have lived to be much older than, I think he was something like, what was he, 65 or something, if that. So there's that. So the pressure of the war did more to damage him than anything else. But they're going to point to Roosevelt and say, you know, when Roosevelt was a great president, he didn't have such great health either. Well, he was very healthy, except for the fact that his legs didn't work all the way up until the heart condition, which, you know, was, you know, only a factor in 1944. And then just for political people, you know, I just want to point out real quickly that, you know, just before this happened, so this has happened on 9/11, and everybody needs to know this has happened on 9/11. In other words, not that it has anything to do with September 11th, but it's happened on September 11th, 2016. Almost all the polls were taken prior to this and taken, you know, prior to her collapsing and having this problem, so we're not going to know what the impact is going to be. It can't be good. That's the first thing. The first takeaway is it can't be good unless they figure out a way to get out from under this. And the only way to get out from under it is for her to get out and be vigorous, you know. So she's got to prove that she's vigorous. And she's clearly not. And this has been, I would just say, go to YouTube and watch all the conspiracy videos. This stuff goes back months. And, you know, Democrats will say, ah, oh, come on, that's a bunch of, you know, that's just these guys. But she's provided the impetus for these videos by having these episodes. Now, I'm going to say one more thing. My mom's going to get mad at me, but I'm going to say one more thing. So what I've read is that her condition may be related to the fact that she had a blood clot on the brain, which I did not know. I read that someplace and I don't. She had a blood clot on the brain as a result of her fall when she was Secretary of State. And if you'll recall, she was out for a long time. And after that, she had a lot of, you know, she had a long recovery. And basically they just said, oh, she just had a bad bump on the head. My father had a blood clot on the brain. And I've talked about this a couple of different times in podcasts, but he went out one early spring morning in March. We lived in the Chicago area, and of course, you know, that time of the year, it's freezing and thawing, and there was, as it is in Minnesota, there was a huge sheet of ice on the step down the side door where you went out from the kitchen to the carport where we lived. And we lived in like a split level, and then there's this one door that you went down the stairs, and of course, he went charging down the stairs, opened the door, stepped out on the cement, and went whoosh right on the ice, came down on his head. And my mom, you know, wanted to call an ambulance, and he was like, no, you know, I'm okay, I'll just sit here for a minute. So he sat there for a little while, and then he said, well, I'm gonna go ahead and go to work, I'm okay. And I think he was probably I'll bet he was 40, 41 at the time, so he was still, you know, young and strong and healthy. And went to work, and that was the end of that. Nothing was thought of. So this was what, March, February or March, when this happened? And, or it may have even been earlier. And it was the late midsummer, because I remember it was just ridiculously hot, middle of the night. We didn't have AC. All the windows were open. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and my mom heard this huge crash in the kitchen, and she went down, and my dad was laying on the floor. He went to the doctor, and they said, well, you've got a blood clot on the brain, and you're going to die if we don't get this out of here. Now, this is, you know, this is a long time ago. This is not the kind of science, the modern technology medicine that we have today. They literally cut a hole in his brain and put in a steel plate That was the way that they fixed it. And he almost died. He got pneumonia, and that's a very interesting connection. Almost died after the operation. He was never the same after that. Now, what does that mean? Well, one of the things I read about blood clots on the brain, when it as related to Hillary Clinton, somebody mentioned that they are prone to fits of anger. They're prone to something like strokes, although I don't want to say strokes, but they're prone to other things like that. And remember that she was like 63 or 64 when she fell and had a blood clot in the brain. My dad was 40. And the biggest thing with him was that he was a gentle person who had a great sense of humor. He liked to drink, obviously. Who doesn't, right? And he was... I wouldn't say that he was fun because he was always an introvert, but my dad was industrious, and before he fell and had the blood clot, he was a very gentle person. After that, he was fit to these anger fits. He was prone to anger fits, rather, and he also became a darker personality. Now, would anybody have known this if they weren't our friends or something? Probably not. And could it have been the influences of life? Perhaps. But all of us, my sister, my mom, and my grandfather before he died, all agreed that he was different after that experience. I mean, he almost died, so, you know, that's part of it too. But I think it's very interesting. This blood clot in the brain thing, and I can speak with absolute authority because I experienced it, not me, but my dad, is no joke. You know, with the Walk and Talk podcast, a lot of it's right off the top of my head, and it's pretty amazing because although off the top of my head, I was pretty close to the age and health of President Reagan and President Roosevelt. Reagan was 70 when he was inaugurated. Roosevelt died on April 12th, 1945, after having been inaugurated for his fourth term in January of 1945. He was, in fact, 63 years old when he died in 1945. Coming up inside the media firestorm about the Hillary Clinton health scare in New York this last weekend. What the media giveth, the media taketh away. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome back to the studio, just ahead of segment three of the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show, number 44 for this week. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. And if you're a pilot, you'll understand what I'm saying. The visual indicator for the Alpha Systems AOA is the best in the business, and they have rave reviews for this product. So they want to get it into your plane's avionics package today. It's basically a visual indicator of the lift underneath your airplane or the angle of attack, and it really does save lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Okay, here is segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Amidst the media firestorm this week about Hillary Clinton's collapse in New York just this last weekend, some thoughts in the podcast this week and the excerpts from those podcasts about media. What it giveth, it sometimes taketh away. How could this affect the presidential race in the final 50 days of the campaign? Isn't it nice for a change to have the mainstream media focused on the Clintons versus Trump? In other words, focused on the problems with the Clinton campaign versus sniping away at Donald Trump. Isn't it interesting hearing the president who had to step in and campaign for Hillary complain about media bias related to coverage of Clinton's problems, asking questions about why the media isn't covering comparing the issues and talking about the policy that she advocates versus Trump, which is absolutely hilarious. Isn't it nice for a change to hear the Clinton advocates in media having to defend her the way the Trump advocates have had to defend him? Isn't it interesting to hear the Clinton advocates defending the lack of transparency from the Clinton campaign because she can't even be honest about this? Well, when did she have pneumonia? Does she have pneumonia or not? When did the campaign know that she had pneumonia or not? Who in the campaign knew? And so forth and so on. But some disclaimers and cautions on this. First of all, having your face plastered all over media isn't necessarily a bad thing if it is handled right. Remember the impeachment of President Bill Clinton for receiving oral sex from an intern in the Oval Office. That was seemingly an insurmountable career-killing problem that, in fact, was surmounted and didn't seem to dent the former president's career in the least. Certainly, his legacy has been in question since then, but you still hear people say that they think he was one of the country's best presidents. I don't necessarily agree with that, but Democrats pine away for the days of, at least mainstream Democrats pine away for the days when Bill Clinton was president. Second, and I have to say this, I am sick and tired of everybody on Facebook and Twitter and anybody who has a blog or YouTube channel or is on television as a the contributor, which, by the way, is my latest. The word contributor just makes me ill. And it's hilarious to have these people who don't know anything telling me what they think is wrong with the former secretary. First of all, I am not going to tell you what I think's wrong with her. I have no idea what is wrong with her, first of all. Second, I don't like her. I never liked her. I think she is crooked. I don't think she's ever told the truth about anything, probably a day in her life. So IT underlings taking the fifth about smashing BlackBerries and God knows what else is nothing new for her or for the country as it pertains to the Clintons. If you actually trust her, believe in her, or think she will make a good president, I think you're sadly mistaken. But then again, you know, that's your prerogative. If you think she is a reptilian client, a member of the Illuminati, some kind of alien, a secret lesbian, whatever, fine. But you do not know what is wrong with her or if anything is wrong with her, and no one else knows. The Facebook posts this week are ridiculous. One of the most ridiculous ones is she had a stroke. First of all, there is no proof that she had a stroke at any time. The stroke theory is based on falsified medical records from her doctor. So no, there is no proof that she had a stroke. There's no proof she's dying. No proof that she has cancer. You know, just because you say she had a stroke and then later at some point she comes out and says, yeah, I admit it, I had a stroke, does not make you right. It just makes you a lucky guesser. You know, if you're that good, please post the winning lottery numbers this week so I can win $100 million. Much of this stuff that you're reading is based on misinformation from shows like InfoWars and YouTubers. And I love the YouTube conspiracy people. And oh, this is the other one that drives me crazy. People saying, it's very interesting that now apparently everyone has to say that it was a conspiracy theory until she had a collapse. It is a conspiracy theory and has been a conspiracy theory that she has some kind of health problem because they will conflate her health problems with all kinds of other issues, that she's having nervous breakdowns, that she is a reptilian alien, that she's a part of the Illuminati conspiracy, that they're trying to get rid of her, that the Russians are doing this to her, and on and on and on. And without any real information as to what is wrong or not wrong, it is nothing more than informed speculation, which makes it conspiracy theory, right? So when you say it has been the purveyance of conspiracy theorists or the territory of conspiracy theorists, if you don't believe me, watch YouTube for half an hour. Go on YouTube and enter Clinton, and you're going to get the, you know, 500 videos, all of which have different theories about what is wrong with her. That's what we call conspiracy theory. There's no proof about it. You can say it, You know, it's a free country, I guess. You know, you have the right to free speech. You can say just about anything you want to say, especially about public personalities. But people need to know that you can say anything about a public personality because they relinquish their rights to being able to say, hey, you're slandering me, because the rules for slander and libel of public personalities is a little bit different than private individuals. The conspiracy theories, because of that, are not based on fact. They're just nothing more than informed speculation. And the other thing is, just because you find a doctor, somebody, to come on and say what he thinks is wrong with her, doesn't mean that he or she knows what is wrong with her. The latest one is that she's traveling with, is this her doctor? She's traveling with a doctor. Well, of course she's traveling with a doctor, you know. I will tell you a little story. When I was covering the campaign in Iowa, you know, I was going all over the state to different events. And at one point, one rainy night at about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was rolling down the highway somewhere, and a motorcade passed me. So it was a Yukon, two Yukons and a Crown Vic, and following them up was an ambulance. And it was probably God knows whose campaign, whether it was the governor or, you know, a rich guy going to a hospital or whatever. There is always an ambulance nearby any of these events. I think it is interesting that they didn't take her to a hospital. I think it is interesting that they did not put her in an ambulance. And because I guarantee you that one was available. Is she traveling with a doctor? Probably she is. We are not going to know what has happened or is happening with the former secretary. It's likely that even if she doesn't win the presidency, people will never know what was wrong with her. The video of Clinton on the 11th of September 2016 collapsing on the street is just simply not a good thing politically. Americans do not want a president who falls down. If you don't like the Democrats and their candidate, this may be all you need. On the other hand, there is a possibility for the sympathy vote in that some people might say they're being really mean to her, she's working really hard, blah, 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 so I'm going to give her a sympathy vote. And don't discount that. Given time and proper public relations, they actually might survive this. 50 days left until the election. There's plenty of time to pull it out. And let's not forget the Clintons managed to outwit the witless Republicans. You know, and towards the end of the week, one would have thought that this story would have started to fade, but it's continued to be really top news. Now, the Clinton campaign, for their part, has released her medical records, and they say that she's fit to go. But my takeaway was she doesn't have any more fainting or coughing spells left. If she faints again, if there's another incident like what happened in New York, if she has another coughing spell and has to walk away like on the aircraft, or if there's any incidences related to her health at any time in the near future, it is going to scuttle her campaign one way or the other. She may not withdraw, but it's going to really make a great opportunity for Donald Trump to take advantage of that in terms of the polling. We'll have to see where things go and what the polls and how it shakes out. And really, again, it's a state-by-state issue, so stay tuned. Next, some thoughts about the Republican Party and the economic numbers and the middle class. Coming up, this is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Just ahead of segment four of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show for this week, once again, thanks to xgovernmentcars.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts, as well as the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. They are Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. They can get you approved if you need a loan, and they take trades. And they have the three-day peace of mind guarantee exclusively at X-Government Cars. So get your butt down to X-Government Cars, 2420 Nevada Avenue North, in Golden Valley, 763-777-8782.
XGovernmentCars.com.
Okay, here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Well, this is a good time to take stock of two major stories this week that caught my eye, and I talked about them in the podcast this week. The first is a series of articles in the New York Times touting these eye-popping numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau, which show average and mean incomes in the United States jumping by as much as 5.2% or something like that in 2015. The implication here is that somehow we have some kind of robust economic growth in the U.S. and that the middle class is benefiting, as well as higher income brackets. And something doesn't quite feel right about these numbers. And of course, I have some questions because I think the questions will be answered going forward by other sources, not the New York Times. First of all, as you know, the full census is taken every 10 years. So this is a census update. So it's a little bit smaller sample size. And they didn't really give us much information about how they compile this data. The next full census is going to be taken in 2020. And the last, of course, was in 2010. On the heels of the financial crisis of 2008, the effects of which peaked in 2009 and 2010, if you'll recall. And while it is great to hear great news on incomes, and while the news media, especially the New York Times, loves to report great economic news, especially when President Obama is still in office, the actual GDP growth for the United States over the last 8 years has not broken the 2% barrier year over year. And yeah, there have been some good quarters. And of course, 2015 in general had a number of good quarters compared to recession years. But the U.S. hasn't seen the kind of dynamic economic growth associated with recoveries in the past. In fact, this recovery has been so anemic, some economists have coined the term new normal to describe a world economy that is not growing much beyond the rate of inflation, if at all. And the rate of inflation is actually not that great. Nominal, actually, at about 1% between 2006 and 2016 in the United States. Now, to deal with this, the central banks across the world in the developed world have been injecting money into the system through various financial tricks. In the case of the U.S. Federal Reserve, they've done a number of different things, up to and including buying billions of dollars worth of securities at one point, or loaning money at 0% interest rates to the banks, which the banks are then supposed to loan out to businesses and individuals. But in fact, most of the time, they just reinvest it in the stock market and make a couple of percentage points of profit. So it really isn't working its way down, so to speak, to Main Street. The Eurozone and Japan have been setting their interest rates at below zero or 0% for some time now. And all this low interest rate action is creating instability in world money markets and bond markets, which we saw affecting the markets just this last week and the week before. In fact, for small and medium businesses not traded on the stock exchanges, getting a business loan has become a tedious process despite large amount of cash, and I put quotes around that, being printed, again, quotes around that, by the Federal Reserve. Actually, what they're doing is creating and injecting money into the markets as described. In touting new income numbers, the New York Times article implies, but it really doesn't state, that the Census Bureau factors in health benefits like Obamacare as income for those receiving it, which actually provokes a really important question for me. Do these numbers reflect the results of government largesse rather than actual income derived from growing businesses and higher paying full-time jobs? How do you account for the part-time jobs and so forth? If so, statistically, then these numbers really aren't that great, and Democrats in particular, and in particular the Obama administration, really shouldn't be touting these numbers because there's really not much there to be that proud of. That doesn't mean, by the way, that trade protectionism advocated by Donald Trump and spending hundreds of billions of dollars for infrastructure the country does not need, advocated by both Hillary Clinton and Trump, is going to work to create the dynamic economy we could have, an economy that could create higher paying jobs and asset growth. The fundamental argument about the best way to grow our economy, taxation, government spending, and excessive regulation is just not being held in the 2016 cycle. Hence, the panic of some Republicans about the potential, suddenly, for a Trump victory in November, which admittedly appears more likely at the close of this week than it has for some time, although he hasn't closed the deal. Remember, I told you weeks ago that Donald Trump could, in fact, win this election, which might be a surprise to some people who, you know, generally their eyebrows will go up, the people that I know in certain sectors of politics and on certain ends of the political spectrum in this country. Do you think Donald Trump could win? Well, yeah, I said, yes, he can, and he might. I'm not saying he will. He has to close the deal. But I'm always amused at the surprise. So you have two mainline political party candidates. One of them's going to win. So yeah, he could win. Another article this week is supposed to be an analysis of this, I guess the term panic, of so-called establishment Republicans over the potential for Donald Trump to actually win in November and be inaugurated president in January of 2017. Did the Republican establishment so hate the Ted Cruz grassroots and the Never Trump crowd that they nominated Donald Trump thinking he would never win, and that then they could blame Ted Cruz, or they could blame the grassroots, or they could blame the Never Trump people? In emails released from former Secretary of State Colin Powell, the famous centrist, even liberal Republican, Powell calls Trump a disgrace. We already know the Bush family and others in the Republican establishment, like Brent Scowcroft and others, have said they are going to support the truth-challenged and now health-challenged Hillary Clinton over the Republican nominee. Now, from my perspective, one thing is for sure. Donald Trump is not a libertarian. He is not a conservative. He is not some 21st century Reagan. Whatever he is, but then again, neither is anyone else in the Republican Party, especially not the man talk show host Glenn Beck called the new George Washington, Ted Cruz, or the guy who was supposed to be crowned with the nomination, Jeb Bush. I don't expect the Democratic Party, given its history, to tout classic economic policy von Mises. But I do expect the party of Reagan to have a cogent economic philosophy and a party ethic that speaks to liberty issues. And that is simply not what we have in the party establishment, and certainly not in Donald Trump. Part of me, truthfully, relishes a Trump presidency to watch these Republican yes men, apologists, and emasculated, party denizens have to defend him over the next 4 years when he does the crazy things that he was going to do. Part of me would love to see a Trump victory simply to watch the media's heads spin around and spew green vomit, like at the end of that movie, The Exorcist with Linda Blair. On the other hand, maybe Republicans deserve a Clinton presidency for their stupidity and political bankruptcy. In the meantime, Americans, and by extension the world, is going to suffer because of the folly of both of these parties. And as I have said in other podcasts and shows, the United States is due for a shift in its current two-party system, as neither party serves the political needs of the people. The people have moved past the parties, and the parties have not caught up. One or both, the Democrat and especially the Republican Party, is probably going to either fall apart, to die, to change, or be replaced in some way, shape, or form with new blood, new ideas, and younger vigor. And as far as I'm concerned, it couldn't happen soon enough. These are our candidates. It's almost comedic. One who doubles as a vandal, destroying the property of companies that provide jobs and growth in our economy in North Dakota. One who doesn't know what started the most challenging foreign policy issue of our time, but is perfectly comfortable correcting interviewers on the proper use of the factually descriptive term illegal alien. One is so ill she can't stand and has consistently lied about whatever is wrong with her or whatever anyone asks her, which is great for the Bob Davis podcasts because we have an awful lot to talk about, and now apparently we are back in a news-rich environment, and we're counting down the days to election 2016. So it's actually kind of exciting, and as sick as I get of politics, sometimes I re-engage, and this was one of those weeks. And of course, I should mention, if you're following the Bob Davis podcasts, one of the new things, if you hit the BobDavisPodcast.com website on a desktop, we now have streaming audio, which plays the last three podcasts continuously, which is really cool. And if you're on a smartphone and you listen, you hit the podcast from Safari or the web app on your smartphone, you have to initiate the streaming. Although some people have told me with older phones, it starts playing automatically. So it's it's a kind of a quick and easy way to listen to the Bob Davis podcasts. That's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts and more of this show, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. And to sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, it's called The Bob Line. You also visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. I'm also accepting donations for Mobile Podcast Command as I get ready to take the big Western trip this fall. More info on that trip coming up next week at the Bob Davis Podcasts. Bye-bye. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Thanks again for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show right here at thebobdavispodcasts.com, and for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command, heading up to Agora Fest this coming weekend, and then a big trip out west. More details on that coming up in future podcasts. Thanks for listening to Podcast 550. Time for the weekend. I'll see you later.